Dan, can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, the recorder is on.
Okay. So this week's Shlishi is very brief, but very difficult. The Parshas Kisisa in general is one of the most theologically dense and challenging Parshas in the whole Torah to ever study. It's shaykh to compare different parts of the Torah in this way, but the overt theological content that we have in Parshas Kisisa with the Chet Ha'egel and the Shira Saluchos and the Yud-Gimel Midas Harachamim, and then the very powerful major theological questions that Moshe asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very, very intense Parsha. And this Aliyah, it's a short Aliyah. The whole Aliyah is only 5 psukim, Shlishi, but it is very intense and very heavy on the content, and it's very difficult to explain. In fact, notice that Rosh Hashanah Rafal Hirsch says, I have his chumash here in front of me, he says that about these psukim, he begins off by saying, whoever sets out to translate and explain the content of verses 12 to 23, half of those are in the Aliyah, must tread more carefully than at any other section of the Torah. For here we are led to the extreme limit of man's knowledge of God. The area that lies beyond this limit is intimated to us so that we should know that we cannot grasp it with the measure of knowledge granted to us for our life on earth. How then, in our attempt to understand and interpret these passages, can we not be filled with trepidation, lest we overshoot the mark of truth and stray from the straight path? Hence, we shall attempt to render only the plain meaning of the text according to the context. So it's a very, very difficult Aliyah, and there's very heavy things going on. Even just on a pshat level, it's difficult a little bit to understand what exactly the discussion is here. It seems to be this is a reference to a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told Moshe that he's going to send a malach with the Jewish people. And there, Rashi and Mishpatim comments that this malach is there to be with them when they sin, that we know that they will sin, so the malach will be there instead of the actual Shekhinah. So now it's not clear where they stand. And apparently Moshe is saying that he wants HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. That's what this pasuk is getting at. Vayomer Moshe Hashem, Re'ayas Pasuki Beis, Re'ata Omer Elai Ha'alas Amazah, Viata Loho Detani, Esa Sher Tishlachi Mi, Viata Amarti Daticha Vishain, Vagamatsasa Chain Be'inoi. So here I don't know who it is you're sending with us, I don't know who the Malach is, and you have said to me that I have found favor in your eyes, so I would like to speak to you directly. Zalman Sarotskin, the Lutzke Rav, comments about this whole section here, that Moshe's point is that even if God was saying that the Malach will take care of them through the wars, through the conquering of Eretz Yisrael, so Moshe is saying on a personal level that that's not all he's interested in. He doesn't just want a Malach who's going to save them in the war. He wants a relationship with God. He wants to know God directly. And in that context, perhaps when he says, he's saying that you rejected my offer. I said, that you can erase me from this book. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses not to do that. So Moshe says, okay, so you want a relationship with me. I want a relationship with you. And I'm not satisfied with the Malach. And that context, so then the next pasuk gets very, very difficult, very hard to understand at all what's happening. And the pasuk says, "V'atayim na matzasi chen beinecha hodieni na es drachecha v'edacha l'man emso chen beinecha re'ei ki amcha hagoy hazeh." So here he says, "I want you to show me your ways." And the Gemara tells us in the first parak of Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin that this represents Moshe asking the core philosophical question that has bothered every philosopher throughout history, every Jewish philosopher, every general philosopher. Where is the justice in this world? Why is it that we have a tzaddik v'ra'lo, v'rasha v'tovlo, that we can't really perceive any connection in terms of how people are treated and their actual merit? It seems like there are very good people who suffer and that there are wicked people who prosper. Why is it? And the Gemara tells us a little bit of a discussion. But ultimately, we know that we don't have any answer to this question, that that's ultimately Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to say that nobody can see me in this world and continue to survive, that my ways cannot be understood. You can only see me from behind, so to speak. So ultimately, there is no answer to that question, even though no answer that we can perceive, even though the Gemara makes a little bit of an attempt towards it. The Gemara talks about the different types of tzaddikim, and as the Torah Tumim and others comment, that even this attempt, clearly it's not the answer. The Torah itself says that he doesn't really get the answer to this question, but that even the question wasn't seeking to really know the truth about these things which are so far beyond us, but even just as far as on the level of our human understanding, how can you even relate to it at all? What does it mean? And on one level, the Gemara suggests that the tzaddik perhaps has something that needs to be fixed. Gemara talks about the difference between a tzaddik ben tzaddik and a tzaddik ben rasha, a tzaddik who is the child of a tzaddik and a tzaddik who isn't, or a tzaddik she'eino gomer, a tzaddik who still needs some type of tikkun, something to be repaired in this world. And as the Mefarshim explained, these are really the same idea, because the Gemara says that we wouldn't really hold somebody responsible for being a tzaddik ben rasha, being a tzaddik whose ancestry is less than a tzaddik, because we look at everyone as individuals. But the Gemara says that a tzaddik ben rasha who has some type of connection to this behavior that was negative of the parent, it can't be an absolute connection because it's still called a tzaddik, but he is continuing on some level this type of a problem. So in that context, perhaps that's what subtracts a little bit from his merit, and maybe that's what creates a little bit of a need for some type of a tikkun, for some type of a correction. But of course, that doesn't really tell us anything in the long run, and it doesn't really help us to understand God's ways that are so mysterious, except us as far as giving us a little bit of a guideline of where we can try to perfect ourselves. Rav Kook suggests in his Ein Hayah, he has a commentary on the Agaditas and Maseches Brachos, and the Maseches Shabbos, so the Gemara and Brachos on Dav Zayin, has a number of comments on this daf, and on this psukim. The Gemara over there comments a lot on these psukim, on this whole discussion. So we'll quote a few times from what Rav Kook has to say about this. So here he discusses the idea of a tzaddik ben rasha. It means that there are midos that perhaps are inherited, that there is a context that sometimes the tzaddik has to overcome. And perhaps that's what it's referring to, that there is still some tikkun in this world. Clearly already, as the Torah Tumim and others note, that the whole Gemara can't be literal, it can't be straightforward, because it sounds like that a Rasha ben Tzaddik is better off than a Tzaddik ben Rasha. That wouldn't make any sense at all. So it doesn't mean that there's any kind of straight formula here. It means that sometimes things happen for different reasons, sometimes it's there to provide some type of a learning experience, that different people need different learning experiences, so the context in which the Tzaddik operates may perhaps make a difference. There is a halachic discussion when one is looking for a shliach tzibur on, say, the Yom Noroim or another similar context, the whole discussion that comes up in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, where you find the whole differentiation that's drawn between Yitzchak and Rivka in their tefillos. So there's a whole discussion there about which tefillah is more powerful. We say that a tzaddik ben tzaddik has the ability to create a more powerful tefillah than a tzaddik ben rasha. So the Mishnah Berurah discusses in that context, if you have a choice, who should you pick for the role of the Shliach Tzibur on the Yom Tovim? On the one hand, there are those who say that the Bach and the Maharshal, that we should go for a tzaddik ben tzaddik. And others disagree. The Taz says that it's all about the individual's kavana, rachmana, liba boy. And you find this idea also in the Torah, quoting from the Rush, that maybe there's a special effort that's going to come from somebody who doesn't necessarily have that background. And that's probably the case. That's how many assume. Vitzal Rudinsky has an essay about this in Parshas Toldos, where he also suggests that the only possible mila to a tzaddik ben tzaddik in that context is if everything else is equal, okay, so that maybe he has the zchus of his ancestors to call upon also. But if everything's not equal, so then the fact that the tzaddik ben rasha was able to overcome whatever context he was dealing with So that itself is a greater source of schus. So that itself is perhaps a reason why he's a better choice for the Shliach Tzibur. So the whole topic is a very difficult topic, and that's what the Torah Tumim and others are pointing out. We don't begin to understand what's going on here. It's what the Torah makes clear, but it's part of the human attempt to try to fit the pieces in somehow. Jonathan, it looks like your hand.
Very good. I wanted to ask, so practically speaking, when deciding on a Shliach Tzibur, so how do you put those values that Rav Rudinsky put out, you know, in place? How are you going to use the measuring stick? Who's tzaddik? Whose father is a bigger Rasha? Whose wasn't? You know, I mean, how does that work in practice?
Yeah, I don't think nobody does investigations on this point. I think he's talking about when everything else is in front of you and there's certain well-known elements. So if everything was really equal, there was nothing else to go on, so then maybe you invoke the extra zchus of the ancestry. But in most cases, if they're close to equal, so then the fact that the tzaddik who had to create his own yichus, so to speak, who had to overcome the context in which he came from, so that's going to be more impressive, and that's going to create this rachman aliba boy that the Taz and that others are referring to. So it's this whole parsha is very difficult to understand, and it's interesting that Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch comments. And Yaakov Kamenetsky makes a comment along similar lines in different words, but it seems like they're saying the same thing, that when he says, Hodieni na es drachecha, that word is neither singular nor plural. Because if it was singular, it would be darkecha. Drachecha is a plural sound, but it should have a yud in it if it was a real plural. So it's kind of a combination plural and singular word, and as he suggests, they both suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways are really unified, they're really all one, but they seem to us to be going in all kinds of different directions. And this is part of really what Moshe is trying to understand, that we know that there is unity to God, but we don't understand how all the different things that we see that he does, how do they point in that direction. And this is really, in one sense, the essence of what it means to be a monotheist, the idea that Avodah Zarah, one of the reasons why Avodah Zarah is such an anathema to Judaism is because we believe that there's all one koach in this world, that everything comes from one place. And once you start splitting things up and saying, this is the good God, this is the bad God, so then you can have split allegiances and you play one against each other. And we believe that there is only one power in this world, that there is one God. And that's what Moshe is saying. So I understand that. I understand that everything comes from you and everything is going in one direction. But in this world, we can't perceive how that's happening. We don't really see how that fits. And that's perhaps what suggests in this world, Drachecha, that we have this unusual phrasing, which is both singular and plural at the same time. And that's in essence what he's talking about. And then he says here, V'eidacha, that I want to know you, Laman emsochein beinecha, so that I can continue to find chen. So there's so many references here to chen. You see, these psukim, so we see about five references to chen. The previous pasuk said chen a few times. Here also, in the second pasuk, v'atam namatzasi chen beinecha, umanem so chen. There's so many references, chen, chen, chen tialanu. Chen keeps coming up again and again. So this notion of a focus on chen, there's many different interpretations about why there is such an emphasis on chen. That on the one hand, Rav Nassim Gestetner and his Laharus Nassim suggests that this is all about Moshe trying to say that everything he's doing is Lashma, but he recognizes that certain actions apparently seem to provoke chen in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, seem to find favor, so he wants to know, what are they? What can I continue to do? What can I continue to emphasize so that I can continue to find God's chen? So the focus, as Rashi notes, on the schar, and the reward. The reward he's looking at not for the sake of reward, but so that he can look to a continued source of merit and he can figure out what works and capitalize on it. And then he says also that the reason he's doing this is for the sake of the people, so that he can be able to provide and to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu's chain on the Jews, ki amcha goy hazeh, that this nation is your nation. That's all his intent and his focus on chain for that purpose. There are other observations as well in terms of the usage of this word, that the Vilna Gaon suggests that it's coming from a different angle, that it's his way of recognizing that he's asking for something very big here. And this is a parallel as he approached Purim, that the same way that Esther talks in that way when she's asking Achashverosh, and she says, if I have found favor in your eyes, so I have to ask for a big favor. So too, Moshe saying that it seems to be that I have found some chayin with you, so I need to ask something big. I need to ask for some understanding and for your continued presence. So he invokes the chayin. The Netziv points out slightly differently that the idea is that the derech of tzaddikim, even when they have schus, so they don't claim that schus is a merit. They say that everything they're asking for is still something they don't deserve. So the whole language of chayin, the way we find it in Chumash and the way we find it elsewhere, is that chayin is really what goes above and beyond what you deserve. That's what the Chazal say about Noach. The Psukim talk about Noach in the end of Bereishis, in the beginning of Parshas Noach. The Psukim talk about Noach having found chayin in God's eyes. And the Gemara says that that's actually not as good as it sounds, in a sense. It means that he wasn't really worthy. He didn't deserve to be saved. But Ela Shematza Chayin, that he found favor in God's eyes, so therefore he was able to be saved. The Chayin represents that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, favors you, even though you don't necessarily deserve it. So Moshe is saying, okay, somehow we have a relationship here where I have found Chayin, I have found this favor. Chazal talk about various aspects that are connected to Chayin. The idea of Torah study is one. And clearly Moshe Rabbeinu is associated with that in a unique fashion. But also anivus, modesty is something that tends to draw a chayin. And of course Moshe is also considered to be unique in that fashion, anav mikol adam. So Moshe says, I have this chayin connection, so I recognize that even if this is not what we as a Jewish people deserve, but I'm calling on the chayin and I'm asking you to bestow some understanding. So then this next pasuk is really fascinating how it's been interpreted. So what exactly is happening here? So Moshe is saying perhaps that the malach is not what we need. We need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So the pasuk says, Vayomar pana yelechu v'hanichosi lach. So what does that mean? My face will go, pana, my face will go, and I will give you what you want. So Rashi interprets that to mean as, okay, so I will be with you myself instead of a malach. But the Gemara has a whole different take on this, and we'll talk for a second about why it's different. But the Gemara understands this really completely differently. That same Gemara in Bracha Sadav Zayin. And the Gemara says that this is a reference to his anger, his Pnei Zav. God is saying, wait for my anger to leave. Panay Yelechu, once my anger is gone, then I will give you what you want. Then I will give in to your request. And based on that, the Gemara says, you see here a principle, Al Yiratza Adam B'Shas Kaiso. That you see that one should not try to calm somebody down during his moment of anger. And that's derived here from Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe is told by God, so wait till my anger leaves, till my Pnei Zam leaves, and then we'll be able to work it out. Then you'll get what you're asking for. So that's a fascinating idea. What exactly is the intent? What exactly are we trying to say when you give such a statement? This appears in the Mishnah of Pirkei Avos as well. In the fourth Mishnah of Pirkei Avos, it's either Mishnah Yudches or Mishnah Chavbei. Sometimes the Mishnayos are calibrated differently in different texts. So somewhere in the fourth parak of Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah has this din also, that one should not try to calm somebody down during their moment of anger. So Rashi over there comments that it's not going to work. That's the issue. That you're just not going to have success. So what exactly is the message then? It was just telling us, is it good advice? You're not going to have success, so don't bother trying. Or is it something more than that? So the Rambam in Hilchos Deis, in Perikei Halacha Zayin, the Rambam lists this as one of the midos of Talmidei Chachamim. And he says that this is something that Talmidei Chachamim do, that they're very careful to only say that which is effective and to not say that which is not effective. They don't say a davar she'eino nishma, and they speak calmly, and they're dam l'chaschus, a whole bunch of things. The Rambam lists there as being the quality of Talmidei Chachamim. And in that context, he says that he's not going to try to calm somebody down, b'shas kaiso. It sounds again like it's not going to be effective, so he won't try. And this is the midah of Talmidei Chachamim, that they don't say things that are not going to have the desired impact. Now, there is a sefer, Maseches Brachos, by a contemporary Talmid Chacham called Birkas Chayin. So on that Gemara, he notes that, he notes two things. He notes, first of all, that it sounds like from the Gemara like it's a din for everybody, and yet the Rambam brings it in the context of Talmidei Chachamim specifically. And also, the Gemara has the din twice, on Zayin Amar Aleph and Zayin Amar Beis. So why does the Gemara restate the same thing an Amar apart? So he suggests the Gemara is telling us two things. That the Gemara is telling us the Metzius, that it's very difficult to get anywhere if somebody is in their moment of anger, you're not going to succeed. And that, therefore, Talmidei Chachamim, like Moshe Rabbeinu, who are sensitive to that, so they'll realize that that's not something they should do. They'll realize that this is not a worthwhile effort. So it's a statement of reality directed to everyone. And then as far as how it plays out practically, maybe the Rambam understands it specifically to be a quality of Talmidei Chachamim. But there are others who don't make that limitation. So, for example, the Tiferes Yisrael, in his commentary to the Mishnayos, he says that not only that it's not going to work, but it's going to make him angrier. He's not going to be receptive, so it's going to push his buttons more. And Rabbeinu Yonah says it's going to, therefore, cause him to say things that are worse. He's going to say things that are inappropriate because you're not really acknowledging his moment of anger and you're trying to wave it away. So that's going to have a very negative effect. The Sefer Sukkas David, by David Kviat, who was one of the Rebbeim in the Mir, passed away a few years ago. So he has a Sefer in Pirkei Avos as well. So he suggests that also what's being conveyed here is that the type of Ritzoy is not going to work because the person is not ready for it. And then, once he rejects it then, it's not going to work later. So what it could have worked later, perhaps, but because he already rejected that message at the time of his profound anger, so then it's going to make the effects later on be ineffective. So perhaps that's what's going, that's what's being conveyed. And the Medrash Shmuel, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, goes so far as to say that the one who does this is going to be in violation. Here's a little bit of a synergy for this week also. He's going to be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol, because the individual, we know that we say that one of the proper midos is that a person should be noach lirtzos, that a person who gets angry should be able to calm down quickly. So if you know that you're not going to be successful in calming him down, so he's going to reject this effort at being calmed down, so perhaps that's lifnei iver, which is a fascinating idea, because it would mean lifnei iver by midos. That's a whole discussion in general, that we say that midos can be treated like averos, or midos inherent personality traits that aren't viewed the same way as actions, or do we see them as averos in the actual sense? So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deis that when you do tshuva on Yom Kippur, you have to do tshuva on midos also. So in that context, some discuss this comment of the Medrash Shmuel that apparently you also have a concept of lifnei iver by midos, which we also saw in our discussion of lifnei iver, that the consequence of anger, there's a principle of lifnei iver, that if you're going to make somebody angry and he's going to disrespect his parents, for example, so that could be lifnei iver. But here, this idea that there's lifnei iver by the kas itself, or by even less than that, by just the continuing kas, by the lack of calming down, that's a fascinating type of concept. So any of these ideas are a little bit difficult to square with the notion that we're talking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu here, that it's one thing if we're talking about human nature, and we're talking about what a person is capable of hearing and a person is capable of handling. But the fact that you're dealing with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it makes the whole point a little bit difficult to understand. So Rav Kook, again in the Ein Hayah, so he has a different take on this. He suggests that why the Gemara is telling us this is that it's trying to make the point that everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu created has a purpose, has a place in this world. And even Kas, which we're very scared of, and even though the Rambam actually says in Hilchos Deis that one should not have the golden mean, the Derech HaMuetzes, when it comes to Kas, but one should be very, very far away from it, but still it has a place. And to say that even B'Shas Kaiso, the Tzlach, the Noda Bihud in his commentary says, Shas Kaiso doesn't even necessarily mean the person is upset, it means the time when it's reasonable for him to be upset, even if he's not upset. So if Cook understands that if you're saying that there's no room for the kas in the world, immediately it has to be taken away. So that's a statement that's not really accurate in terms of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's creation. So even God himself essentially teaches us this point. I think what the idea there is a little bit is that it's also reflective of the fact that it's only effective when dealing with emotions like this to recognize that the emotion has to be respected. It can't be waved away. You can't say that whatever's making you mad, it can't even be acknowledged for a second. It has to be waved away even during its appropriate moment. So there's a moment of kas. After that moment passes, so then the kas should be able to be addressed. In this case, it's very parallel to what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos connects it to. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos has the idea there also that you don't try to be Menachem and Avel b'shah shemeisa muta l'fanav, that before the funeral, before the burial, so we don't try to comfort an Avel, which is a real halacha, which people are not always so aware of, but this a real halacha that one is not supposed to engage in nichum avelim before the funeral. So some of the commentaries understand it exactly the same way as this, but it's simply not going to be received. It's a fruitful, it's a completely futile effort, because the same way the angry person is not going to be calmed down, a person at that stage of grief is not going to be able to receive tanchumen. But you could also understand it in terms that it's wrong. That's how some of the Forshim understand also, that that's not a time yet when the Chama is appropriate. If there hasn't yet even been the Kfur, it's disrespectful. And so to hear, the anger sometimes has a place too. And that to say that it has no place is perhaps not properly respecting what the individual is dealing with. And that's perhaps what's being conveyed here as well. So the Lutzker Rav is Naim Latoru, when he comments on this pasuk, and he also notes that it's hard to understand why this is connected to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But in terms of human nature, we could understand it a little bit more, but that God has this issue is harder to see. So he suggests that either this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu teaching us this concept, which we find elsewhere as well, that it doesn't necessarily mean that this is relevant to God, but it's part of what we need to learn from what God is teaching, or that sometimes you can have a kas that's necessary from the recipient's perspective, that even if the person who's angry or the one who's angry theoretically doesn't have to be so angry, but sometimes the subject of the anger needs to get that message, and to prematurely call an end to that is not necessarily advisable. And that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu was teaching, that that's necessary for this moment. It has to happen, and then after that happens, then we can talk about calming down, then we can talk about getting past that. From a halachic perspective, these different attitudes we've seen from, say, the Rambam's way of reading it, that it's a midas talmid chachamim, and let's say Rabbeinu Yonah and others who say that you're going to get the person angrier and be machshel him, perhaps in behavior that emerges from that. So that could be then construed as basically a machlokas as to whether this whole concept is a midah tova, is good advice, or whether it's an actual issur, or you're really doing something wrong in acting in this way. Zilberstein is Chashukei Chemet to Maseches Brachos. So he says, is a nafkamina, for example, if you see somebody else doing this, should you interfere? If you see somebody else trying to calm down somebody, b'shas kaisam, so should you try to stop them? Is there doing something wrong that you should really get involved? Or are we saying that, no, it's bad advice, and it's good advice not to do this, it's midat talamin chachamim, not to act this way, but if somebody else wants to try it, then that's not necessarily your involvement, that's not necessarily your problem. So it's a very powerful concept, and it has parallels in reality and psychology and in basic elements of human nature. It's a very important idea. One of the reasons why, as the Torah Tzvima notes, that here that Gemara in interpreting this pasuk this way, Panai Elechu, that it's about God's anger as opposed to, I'm saying, like Rashi had said on Chumash, that I will go with you. The question is, how do you read the next pasuk? So the next pasuk says, "Vayomer Elav, im ein panecha holchim, al taleinu mizeh." So Moshe says, if your countenance will not come with us, don't let us go on from here. So God just said he is going to give him his presence, if that's what the pasuk means, if that's how Rashi understands it. So it's a little hard to understand the flow. The Ramban has a whole comment here where he says, very hard to understand this, al pikshat, and he has a whole lengthy discussion about it. But Sifsei Chachamim, on the side of the Rashi, the Chachamim says that Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying that, yes, I am going to calm down, I am going to forgive. And Moshe wants to convey, on behalf of the Jewish people, the great love that God has, that the Jews have for God, that they're saying that even if you wouldn't calm down, even if you wouldn't forgive us, so we don't want to then proceed under those terms. We would want to stay here. We don't want to move forward unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be with us, unless he's going to forgive us, and that that's going to be the attitude. The Maram Shik, in his drashos, Maram Shik is a sefer, the Maram Shik al HaTorah. Maram Shik was one of the notable students of the Chassam Sofer. So he wrote the very important shuvas. But there's also, he had many drushas as well, so they have a sefer al Torah they collected from various places, from the drushas and from the tshuvas and from everywhere. So here he discusses as well that in everything. So there is the hishtadlus, that which we try to do, and then there is God's hashgacha, which fills in the rest. So originally, when there was the malach promise, so the malach was going to be there for that extra part, even when there's the hishtadlus that's called for. So now Moshe is saying that now that we're talking about the Kadosh Baruch Hu's direct involvement, but he's still concerned that maybe there's going to be too much placed on his shoulders in terms of hishtadlus, and he's asking for even more assistance than this. So in general, this whole discussion, which seems to shift back and forth from a malach being involved and from Kadosh Baruch Hu's direct involvement, so Rav Soloveitchik had a comment about this, a short comment that was published in the Sefer that came out a little while ago, Vision and Leadership, which talks about Yosef and Moshe. So in that book, it says there that originally Moshe thought it was okay that we should have an angel that will lead us, but now he figures we need God's presence directly, because now, after the Chet HaEgel, so we have sin. We have Avera as part of our national character. And if that's the case, that this would continue, that this was going to be an element of how the Jewish people were going to be proceeding, so then we now need Chesed. That if there's going to be sin involved, we need the Chesed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in order to be able to function. And a Malach is not capable of expressing Chesed. The Malach is just there, basically Al Pidin. And if we need Chesed, then we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu as his direct decider of how things are going to happen. And therefore, that's where this whole debate comes in, that we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's direct presence. It's hard, again, for us to really understand on a literal, direct level anything that's going on here. It's interesting to note that if you look at the comments of the Node of Yehuda in his commentary to Maseches Pesachim, and the Tzlach to Maseches Pesachim, and Daf Nun Vav, he understands it really in kind of an opposite way. He says that the malach is really the shituf between din and mishpat, between din and chesed, between justice and rachmanis, that there is a component of chesed and the malach as well. So again, it's all a little bit beyond us to know exactly how to relate to it. This is some of what's suggested in terms of understanding what's going on here. And then in this last pasuk in the Aliyah, so it's also very difficult to understand. So Moshe says, how else will anybody know that I have found chen in God's eyes and that the people have found chen in God's eyes? We only know that through your traveling with us. That we want to be distinguished, that we should be recognized as being different from all of the nations of the world. Asher al pnei ha'adama. So the Gemara has a comment here, which is also, this is all again in Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin, it's all in that same passage, but the Gemara has a comment that's very difficult to understand. And the Gemara says, on the one hand, that Moshe is asking, Shetishra shchinaso b'Yisrael, that God should provide his presence to the Jewish people consistently, and even when we're in times of challenge and times of less deservingness, God should still show his Shekhinah to us, show his continued presence, and that it should be exclusive, that he should not show his Shekhinah to the rest of the world. So that's a very difficult idea to understand. We're saying that Moshe is kind of, so to speak, being selfish here, is being stingy. Tzaras Ayin is the Sfarim ask, as Rav Kook and others, and the Maram Shik and his Rosh's ask. It can't be that we know that Moshe is so generous of spirit, the idea that he's being somewhat stingy and hoarding all the Shekhinah and saying it should only be for the Jews, it shouldn't be for the rest of the world. What exactly does that mean? It's a very difficult idea to understand. On one level, it could mean that it's part of the idea of not losing the Shekhinah, that we say that we want the Shekhinah present even when we sin, and then maybe even if the Shekhinah is removed from us for a time, so okay, then we hope it'll come back. But when it's given to another nation, so to speak, it may give us the sense that we're being replaced, that we've been turned out. That's one way, perhaps, of understanding it. But others suggest a little bit differently. So with Cook writes that this should be viewed as selfish. This is on behalf of the whole world. That the notion of this type of recognition, of this type of status for the Jewish people, is the idea that the Jews are supposed to lead the whole world into understanding and Kadosh Baruch Hu, into the ultimate Chachma. And that if there's some type of distraction, if it seems like other nations are similarly accomplishing things, even if they're not heading in the same direction, so that will ultimately be against the interests of the nations of the world, because ultimately they're not going to realize that they're supposed to get the message of what the Jewish people are supposed to represent. The Maharam Shik in that sefer that we mentioned a minute ago, Maharam Shik has a long drasha about this, where he basically discusses the fact that all the nations of the world that have sought out the divine presence have done so with different types of motives. Some of them want it for the sake of power. Some of them feel that there's all kinds of black magic that can be used in order to attain this. And Moshe was concerned that the message should be clear, that God's Shekhinah only comes through adherence through his Torah. It's interesting, there is a whole discussion about this whole idea that Moshe wants to know God. He says that he asks for Das. So in the Tshuvas Knaf for Nana, which was written about 100 years ago, a little more. So in the Hakdama to his Tshuvas on Yoredei, he talks about what it means, Yoredei, to be taught knowledge. He says the whole idea of knowing God is to come to love God through knowing his mitzvos, through knowing his halachos, and that's what Moshe is focusing on throughout this whole discussion. So here Moshe is saying that the recognition is only going to come if the Jews are the exclusive recipients of the Shekhinah, so then nations of the world will understand that it's not a trick, you can't do any black magic and somehow get the Shekhinah to favor you, that it comes only through this combination of God's chain, of God deciding where he's going to bestow it, which is more than we deserve, but it's not out of nowhere. It comes from these midos of cleaving to the Torah, of anivus and the like, all these qualities that Moshe Rabbeinu exhibited and that he transmitted to the Jewish people, to the extent that we're able to have those factors combined, so then there's a possibility of the Shekhinah continuing to rest upon us, and that message should be clear to the rest of the Jewish people. So again, these psukim are very, very difficult. All the concepts that are contained within them are so far beyond us. And that's, in essence, what's really being conveyed by this whole Aliyah, this whole Parsha, that all of it is beyond us, that we can't really understand God's ways in this world. But even just in the more basic sense of trying to have some kind of kalim to understand, of trying to have some type of tools to know what exactly is necessary to be done. So perhaps on some level, this Aliyah is one of the kalim that we use to try to struggle through those issues. Okay, so we'll stop there. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. You should be able to stay warm and stay safe. Sunday.